But this mystery runs deeper, for in closing this particular episode, I wish to share with you the prime motivator that led me to write this piece. Whether you believe me or not, I honestly don't care. What is, for it relates to what I simply call Chapter 13 in reference to my original film. In Lucky Chapter 13, as I already mentioned, I make reference to James Farn's work on negative mass and Julian Barber's A Gravitational Origin of the Arrow of Time paper. But at the very end, I bring up a rather odd curiosity. So let me show you a magic trick. A real magic trick. To quote the great archmagus of our time, Paul Daniels, you like this. Not a lot, but you like it. Now is the only time I can write this, having only in recent weeks had a good think about it. In making my episode on the expansion of space-time, I presented an animation that I had done depicting the events of a hypernova, namely showing the formation of a central accretion disk that feeds a newborn black hole created from the implosion of the star's core. As the black hole feeds, it causes the formation of a concentric series of jets. Note the corkscrew action depicting a particle streamline upon the glass rendered fields in order to show CPT symmetry. However, after a bit of a rethink, I'm not too happy with this animation, as it is missing a very important event. Namely, like a volcano, the star as it goes nova literally blows its top. This is borne out in numerous computer models of nova events. Rather than showing at the start the core being opened up and exposed gradually, as I have originally animated it, the more accurate description is to show this initial eruption and ejection of mass that precedes the formation of the jets. Now, this is a very important and fundamental detail, because it gives me an origin story for how supermassive black holes are both formed and why one is to be found at the center of every galaxy in our universe. The basis for my argument here comes from considering the place in our universe where the heavy elements of nature, like the uranium atom, are born. Specifically, they are born in the very heart of a massive star undergoing a hypernova event by the fusion of heavy elements into the heaviest, driven by the implosion of the nova at the center of the star. As the core implodes, leading the fusion of atoms into heavier elements, there is an equal and opposite outward reactionary force along the axis of the poles. This ejection of mass and matter out from the center of the star causes these newly formed heavy elements to be spread out into the universe, as opposed to being swallowed by the ultimate act of fusion, that being the newly born black hole formed by the implosion of the star's core. In thinking about the Big Bang as being like a hypernova, we employ the ideas of fractal geometry and scale invariance. One such idea, or way of picturing it to my mind, has been to think about black holes as being like fundamental particles of nature. In a sense, this is to imagine the electron as having an event horizon around which the fabric of space-time is warped. Like an astronaut falling into a black hole, so too do I imagine being a picoscaled astronaut falling into an electron across its event horizon and onto the other side of the field where the arrow of time is reversed with respect to our own. In talking about the same pattern of behavior at different scales, I have come to use the phrase on the next scale up in inferring the same pattern of behavior but at a much larger scale. Ultimately, I am trying to imagine an existence beyond the bounds of our universe where an average star is hundreds of millions of light years across, whose atoms would be solar systems or galaxies to us. So in describing such an existence, I use the phrase, on the next scale up, as in, we see the shadow of such a massive star-like object, the McLean, that exists on the next scale up to our universe in the spherical Borriti supervoid. The best way to communicate this idea is to look at the fractal Mandelbrot set. Here, we can see the famous outline shape that is the signature shape of the Mandelbrot set. Now zooming out, we can see the same signature shape being repeated on the next scale up. And again, zooming out, we see the same signature shape repeated yet again on the next scale up. So in thinking about a hypernova event, on the next scale up, having the same pattern of behavior in terms of how heavy elements are forged and then scattered out into space, so too I made the connection button thinking about the heavy elements on the next scale up. Namely, a supermassive black hole is equivalent to the heaviest and largest element, but on the next scale up. Hence, I now have a very good start to my story in order to explain why and how supermassive black holes came to be found in every galaxy in our universe. In the final moments, as the McLane goes nova and its core collapses, birthing the actual Big Bang singularity, in this ultimate act of fusion, so too are smaller and smaller black holes being fused into our larger and larger masses. These new heavier atoms, on the next scale up, became to us supermassive black holes that we see at the heart of every galaxy. From the very start, they were the seeds around which galaxy formation took place. The final moment of the McLane and the hypernova Big Bang event is triggered. In this instance, the Big Bang singularity is born by the implosion at the core. The equal and opposite reaction to the implosion is the ejection of matter from the core of the McLane outwards, as at each pole, this material erupts and is ejected. Here, the newly fused supermassive black holes at the center of the McLane are ejected and scattered out along the poles. And then, in the next moment, the concentric jets, fed by the input accretion disk, slams into and captures this ejected matter, which then goes on to form the bulk of our universe. Now, here is where I make the argument how the concentric ring jet caused space-time to fold into a series of concentric ringed vortices. For long reasons, such as why is radioactive decay invariant to time, the quantum eraser experiment, the speed of light and the Bose-Einstein constant, I make the argument for there being multiple hours of time. In fact, going back to my very original diagram that I drew, using a cross-sectional analysis approach, we could draw 6 distinct hours of time going forward and 7 going back. The flow and directional arrow of time coming from and arising from the convection current of the various vortices. All this detail and exactly why I will make the subject of future work, but I wanted to lay out as good a description as I can in order to show that I have thought this through. But I have a problem, as it comes down to the object that inspired this chain of thought that led me to this argument in regards to the origin of supermassive black holes. Now, at this moment in time, can I make this argument? Not later, nor yesterday, but now. The reason being is that I have shown my first animation picturing the hypernova and have spent a couple of weeks having a good think about what was wrong with it. What is wrong is this ejection of mass which seeds our universe with supermassive black holes is missing. However, in trying to understand retrocausality and the quantum eraser experiment, I wish to present how exactly I am employing my prized piece of inspiration that is driving this work I pen here and now. To say this could be seen as controversial within the discipline of science would be the greatest understatement of all time. For myself, it has caused no ends of angst. From my point of view, science and religion should not mix. One concerns itself with external, demonstrable truth through reason, experiment, and observation. The other is a matter of the heart, mind, soul, and faith, a thing I would ask no man to demonstrate. However, compelled by, let us say, a mandate of heaven, I made my original film in order to lay out my thoughts, story, and path. That leads me to say what I am saying. Spoiler warning, as it does make for jaw-dropping filmmaking. At the end of the film, I present an argument that the structure and imaging of my proposed Big Bang hypernova hypothesis is to be found in religious symbology. So go and watch that if you haven't. At the end of this film, I presented an idea about life, or more specifically, us humans. In drawing my initial cross-sectional diagrams, I notice a curious oddity. I notice a similar symbology between my cross-sectional diagrams and religious symbolic patterns. For instance, the concentric rings structure of Stonehenge that the Druids built. In fact, if I were asked to draw a map which I originally did before having any knowledge about this, then it would look like the symbology found upon these two osseries. But I wish to concentrate your attention to the lesser known ossuary, which had one improbable name written on it in Aramaic, Caiaphas. Archaeologists, historians, and scholars agree that this is most likely the same Jewish high priest as mentioned in the Gospel of Mark and John. Now, for myself, I came upon this by pure accident. I wanted to watch a documentary that was not cosmological or science related in order to distract me from my obsession. I think journalist Simca Jakubowicz presents a very good description and case in his film Nails of the Cross. However, it is in this central pillar with its six arrows pointing to heaven, emerging from seven cornices above a central mass that opens out on top of the pillar. This detail here led me to have faith and belief in my idea about there being six vacuum spaces on cross-section, each with a separate line of causality, but it is this central pillar that opens out at the top that it was that really caused me to think and formulate the argument regarding the origin story of supermassive black holes. I do not believe this is mere coincidence. Just as I believe DNA and RNA molecules are CPT symmetric is no coincidence. Can I prove it? No. All I can do as a scientist is tell you the honest truth. For ultimately, science and religion and their quest are a search for ultimate truth. And the simple truth is, without seeing the symbology, I may not have had the conviction to lay out the arguments that I have herein presented to you. Some may laugh and shake their head. More disturbing to me is that some may call it a miracle. I just call it life. The real and true miracle I see comes in the boast I made at the start of this piece, namely the ability to get hydrogen fusion working as a sustainable energy source all the while inventing the warp drive. Zero carbon economy with fortunes and ventures for all, while simultaneously coming to a higher level of understanding as we begin to see this universe, rich in life and our place amongst the stars. The miracle is that of science, for in my quest I have caused no harm or harsh word to be spoken, nor do I have to kill or cause injury to anyone. All I need is a persuasive argument against which I can stack the mathematics, philosophy, and all the experimental and observations that I can find. That is the real miracle, I believe. Until next time.